Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get started.
Straight from New York, yo, yo, this handsome ass.
Yo, yo,
ah, now, fucker.
Tune in now, Joe the Funk Master. Watch your grill, you'll get knocked out cold faster. Talking shit, now we talking facts. With the mountain off the back, you in trouble, came to burst your bubble. I don't shelter punches, they find home on your mind about a double. This the weekly scraps. You don't need a map, GPS, I'm right here to lead a dash. The world doesn't know it needs, but I grow disease. Planet, fuck a name and the fame. Only legacy remains. Remember the name, Aljamain Sterling.
It ain't shit, it ain't shit.
Motherfucker.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 127, I think. But I don't know. The easiest way to remember this episode is Mother's Day weekend. I hope you guys all had a great Mother's Day weekend. And obviously, for the trolls out there, I put a late night post. I normally don't care about that stuff, but I'm like, I don't know if I should post something because these guys are going to take away from it. And then I thought about it. I was like, just don't read the comments for this one. The other ones, you can read the comments and then troll back. I don't really know what they're saying, but I got a few notifications and that was enough for me. But like, you know what? I'm not even going to get into it today. But I hope you all had a great Mother's Day weekend and hope you got to spend some time with your loved ones. And of course, your mothers of your child and the mother that birthed you. You know, so that's all you can do. I'm over here in, Vegas. So I'm not actually with my mom right now, but I'm doing some stuff for her back in New York. So I think she's pretty happy about that and fixing up some stuff in the house. This mouse is pretty hard to use without a trackpad, but for some reason, the fights this past weekend seemed like they were very, very short. Like it seemed like there wasn't that many fights on the card, but there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So I guess it was a little bit smaller from, I guess, some of the fights that got scratched, but overall, it just seemed like there wasn't that many fights on this card to begin with. But other than that, we still had some pretty solid fights. This weekend, we got a pretty big one coming up. I believe it is UFC, 262. So far, so good. We're not going to actually break that one down. I'm going to get the betting lines for that one for you guys, and then we could get a little bit more in detail with that one. If you guys haven't yet, hit that subscribe button. So let's go to this first one, the main event, Marina Rodriguez versus Michelle Waddison. Michelle Waddison is a very tough female, very tough mom, to say the least. I just think she might be a little too small for the weight class. Obviously, this one was 125, but normally she fights at 115. I believe since they made it a 5-round main event, and this is interesting because it was a 3-round fight beforehand, right? And then you see the Calvin Kattar versus Zabit Magomedsharipov. That was a 3-round fight, but they made it one. It jumped into a main event, and they kept it as a 3-rounder instead of making it a 5-rounder. For this one, they made it a 5-rounder instead of a 3-rounder, and they also gave him an extra 10 pounds so that they didn't have to cut as much weight. Very, very respectable and understanding for sure. You know, you don't want to have people out there fading because they had to make the tough weight cut, and then you're giving them two extra rounds that they didn't even prepare for, you know? So it's a completely different situation. So I look back at a situation like that and kind of wonder, like, well, why didn't they just make that one 155 and push it up away? I guess because of the title implications and stuff like that. Maybe that's probably why they did something like that and kept it as a 3-rounder. But just imagine how that fight could have turned out that we had those two extra rounds. It could have been a different fight or it could have been the same fight. We really don't know. But that's why the 5-rounders make such a big difference. And when you're in that position, you never know what's going to happen. It's hard to count anybody out because you can always come back and find a way to win. And when I see that, I think of Miesha Tate versus Holly Holm. Same exact situation. Miesha Tate is getting her butt kicked pretty much the entire 4 rounds of the fight. Doesn't really have much offense to offer Holly on the feet, but she stays the course, endures a lot of punishment, but manages to get the fight down one time in the 5th round, and that's all she needed. She got the fight down, got the hooks in, got the choke, and became a UFC world champion by battle of attrition. And that's the stories that I love to see, like, just like the underdogs coming through and and winning and proving people wrong, so to speak. You know, because you just never know what's going to happen. It is a fist fight, for crying out loud. Now, with this one, like I said, Michelle, she's a tough female. She's in there. She's battling. But I feel like she might be just a little too small for the weight. Not 125, 115. And I don't think she has the boxing power or skill set, versatility, like a girl like Marina Rodriguez, who's throwing, she's throwing heaters when she's out there scrapping, you know? She might not, it might not, obviously they're 115 pounders, you know? So it might not be the most impactful for people to get knocked out on a regular basis. Like, people always criticize the bantamweights and all the other lighter guys, but there are knockouts. First one that comes to mind is obviously Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Rose Namajunas and Zhang Weili versus Jessica Andrade. There are knockouts at that weight class. It just happens at the highest of skill level with this division, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, when I see this situation, I feel like Rodriguez was just running away with the fight. Yeah, Michelle Watson got that one takedown in the fourth round. There was one judge that gave Michelle the first round. I was kind of confused because it just seemed like Rodriguez was the one landing on the strikes, doing all the damage, and she looked like she was the cleaner, fresher fighter in there. I saw some comments like this was a back-and-forth fight. And no disrespect, but where? You know, I just didn't see where it was going back and forth. If you're talking about clinching, okay, maybe I can see your point. But if you're talking about the striking and the damage, that was pretty one person handing that out the entire time. And again, no disrespect to Michelle Watterson. She's a great person. Met her a couple of times. I just think the boxing was such a big discrepancy. She had some tricky kicks that she was using, the side kick, the push kick. And I was talking about this amongst friends, and I said, Michelle's tough. She's got a great skill set. The only thing with her fight style, it's a karate base. I feel like it's almost Wonderboy-esque, but there's a little bit of a difference where Wonderboy can put your lights out. I'm not saying Michelle can't, but you don't see that too often. I normally see if she can get the fight down to the ground, she could choke you out. But with this one, I just feel she's hitting those side kicks and those up kicks and those teeps, and it's more of like a self-defense tactic. If you're out in the real world and someone's trying to close the distance on you fast, that might not know what they're doing, and they're charging at you, and you hit them with a, boom, a check sidekick and keep them away, keep them at bay, and gives you an opportunity to stun them or take the wind out of them for a quick second to get out of there. Now, for a fight like this, at the highest level for mixed martial arts, for 25 minutes, that attack, you're going to have to do a little bit more if you understand where I'm going with this. It's a good fight style. But if you can't knock them out eventually when they're getting frustrated and then you can catch them coming in, then it's only so long that you're going to be able to keep hitting that attack, that strike technique, and eventually they're going to be able to get inside and do what they want to do. You know, so that's the one thing I had to say about that. I'm going to have to check this because I want to make sure that there's nothing funky going on around here. Funky. Now, the next one, Alex Morono versus Donald Cowboy Cerrone. This was not the way I thought the fight was going to go. And for multiple reasons, obviously, Cerrone's the veteran. And I said a couple of things going into the fight. I said, Cerrone's the veteran. He's been in there with so many different people. He said he was motivated to fight Sanchez. This is going to be a great opportunity for him to get back in the win column. Morono had other plans. Had severely other, like severely different other plans. And with Morono, he gets to win at 4 minutes and 40 seconds. I'm looking at my monitor right now on my TV. And I said his striking is not the cleanest. And I still stand by that. But this is the best Morono we've ever seen. In my opinion, I thought he looked a lot more sharp, a lot crisper, throwing straight up punches, not winding up like it's a straight up bar brawl. So there was a couple of things that he did that I thought was pretty impressive. Cerrone tried to tie him up a couple of times, but to no avail, Morono was still able to land strikes where he can land strikes and keep the pressure on Cerrone. And once he had him hurt, he smelled blood, the great white smelled blood, and he just kept attacking. And honestly, this gives me, I mean, obviously he doesn't give a shit what I think, but this gives me more of an optimistic outlook on what Morono can bring to the table, because some of his past fights were not the prettiest. But again, I've said this multiple times in my podcast. When I came into the UFC, I was not the cleanest striker either. I was not the prettiest striker. And I barely struck because it wasn't the prettiest. I always felt I'm going to do my bread and butter, which is get the takedown, drag them down to the ground, stifle them against the cage. And eventually, once they make a mistake trying to escape, knowing that they're out and down on time, I'm going to strangle that man. This is like the Alex Morono. And eventually, I got better with my striking, getting more comfortable, getting more ring time. Same thing. MMA is such a young sport. Still, people are still starting the sport at 30 years old, getting into the UFC, 25 years old, getting into the UFC. You see, now you're starting to see kids that are picking up this sport at a much younger age. And I think that's going to be the difference where you see a lot more development and skill set and the striking. Those guys who are training at 6 years old, 10 years old, I don't want no problems with those guys, because when they get up to our age, I'm 31. When they get up to our age, and even so, when they get to the UFC at 21, 25, those are going to be the new faces of this company, the new faces of the sport, the killers out there who are just well and diverse in all their skill sets, that they're going to be a problem for anybody. It doesn't matter where the fight is, standing, grappling, they're going to be able to do it all. You get a guy like me who's wrestled since high school, 10th grade, all the way through college, coached a little bit, then decided, hey, I think I could be good at this. Let me try this. Now I'm learning striking on the job pretty much, you know? So I got my experience from getting in there as an adult while these kids are so young and they're getting in there as kids and they're developing their skill set, understanding distance, time management, and they're going to get to a point where it's like, these guys are going to be so badass where it's just like, yo, you can't make any mistake when you're in there, even at the lowest level on the regional circuit. You're going to start seeing guys coming into UFC at 4-0 because they developed at a very young age. I don't know how we got on this tangent from Alex Morono, Donald Cerrone, but again, Morono, great performance, and got to put some respect on it. I stand corrected. Like I said, the guy looked better, did what he had to do, got the job done, and got a big win over a guy like Donald Cerrone, who people are saying he should call it quits. I don't know. Maybe it's just Morono's time, or maybe it is time for Cerrone to hang him up, because the competition, like I said, is just going to keep getting stiffer and stiffer and better with the skill set. I mean, I thought Morono, based on his previous fight, this would have been a great opportunity for Cerrone. Not the cleanest striker. Maybe he can take him down. But like I said, Morono had different plans. And it leaves you wondering what's next for Donald Cerrone. I think they said that was his fifth loss in a row. I'm going to look right now. No. He beat. No, that was a grappling match. Nico Price was a no contest. Majority no contest. I forgot what happened in that one. So then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes. Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, Conor McGregor, Pettis. He won a grappling match with an armbar in overtime over Rafael Dos Anjos, which is pretty wild. And then loses to Alex Morono now. So I think there's going to be a lot of talking with him and his team that they're going to have to try to figure some things out and see what else is left out there for him, because maybe it is time. I know that retirement, I always think about it, and getting the surgery still makes me feel like I got a fresh lease on my athletic career, and I do wonder if I'm going to be that person to stick around too long and saying, like, my body can still do it. My body can still do it. My mind is still telling me I can do it. But then when I'm going out there and competing, the results are different. And so to speak, that's what Cerrone was saying in his interviews. So I don't know. I don't know what's next for him. I don't know what him and his team is going to do. But they got a lot of big decisions that they need to make. This next one, got to take my retainers out. Oh, Neil Magny versus Jeff Neal. This was a fun one. I called Neil Magny winning this one. People were giving me shit like, no, Jeff Neal's going to take him out. Jeff Neal hits hard, but the fight with Wonderboy, he couldn't get close. Neil Magny's one of those guys. He's not Wonderboy per se, but he's one of those guys that's hard to get close on. I thought Jeff Neal might have gotten the decision because of the second round. I rewatched it last night, home alone, in his house in Vegas. Watched it again last night, and I see how Magny won the second round. So round one, you give it to Jeff Neal. Rounds 2 and 3, Neil Magny all the way. Volume, output, just looking busier, making the sound effects, which it might sound silly, but I think for the judges, they're paying attention to you more because it's just something that's just constantly triggering in your ears and you're just like, okay, okay. And you're either going to say, you ain't doing squat shit, or you're going to say, you're doing a lot of stuff. Because now I'm hearing it and I'm paying attention. I'm a little bit more focused because subconsciously I hear it and it just draws my attention to it over and over and over and over. And that's what he was doing. And he started to pick him apart a little bit more in that third round. And Magny's not busting you up per se with like serious damage, but he's a winner. I believe they say he's like one win away from beating GSP's record. I think he's tied with GSP right now, if I remember correctly. Great performance, man. Both guys, they fought hard. Jeff Neal put out a post, a statement, and I saw a couple comments saying, like, that's a lot of words for I lost. And I was like, yo, the fans are brutal. Yeah. Everyone has something going on going into a fight. I'm sure Neil Magny had some issues going into this fight. Jeff Neal said he had some issues, diarrhea, blah, 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 the whole nine. And the same thing with me. I've had my issues going into the fight, my last one. And I had issues going into the last fights with Corey Sandhagen and other guys. You know, my hands hurting, bone bruises going into the fight because of rough sparring sessions, going too hard, too close to the fight. And then the Sandhagen fight, I get my nose busted, I think about 3.5, maybe 4 weeks out from the Sandhagen fight from a Rob. I take him down, he throws a back elbow, busts my nose. I finished up the sparring of the last round. It was the second round towards the end. I finished the last round, I finished the third round, and I go like, bro, I need a break. And I didn't think I was going to spar again for the rest of the training camp, but then someone gave me a bar, Joey Colon, thank you. He gave me the bar. Headgear, and I sparred Justin, the kid who's like 6'1", and trying to spar that. He's 2-0 also as a pro right now in his MMA career. And to try to spar a guy like that who's able to get inside and stay long at the same time is very, very difficult. And then he's throwing uppercuts while I got this bar on my face and I can't see anything coming up underneath me. It was the most frustrating thing to do sparring-wise. So everyone's has this situation. I don't know what it was for Jeff Neal. I know what it was for myself, for Jan. But like again, like I said, everyone has something that they have to deal with, and whether or not it's valid, that's why we fight and we say who is better this day and that time, bar any excuses. Excuses are... They're real. They're not a fake thing. They're not made up. They are something that does plague. When you have a competition that you get ready for, it's like when Michael Jordan had the flu, that's an excuse, but he still won. But it's still an excuse for, you could say maybe his performance, but then they said he played one of his lights out games while he had the flu. So you just never know. And I always go back to this. This is why when I look at guys like Khabib and GSP, when they could perform over and over again, John Jones, the guys who constantly keep winning and winning and winning, to do that day in and day out and not have an off day, that says a lot about your skill set, your mental, everything. Just knowing how to win. That's the hard part. Knowing how to win in any particular situation. That's what people don't get enough credit for. And Jeff Neal had a good fight. And, you know, despite all the situations that he had going on, he still fought well, still fought hard. And unfortunately, he just wasn't able to get it done against a veteran like Neil Magny, who's been around as one of the most winningest fighters in the UFC welterweight division. Him and Khamzat Chimaev going at it tit for tat. So hopefully that fight happens. I think that's going to be a tougher one for Magny because he ate some big shots from Neil in that first round, swelled up his eye pretty good, but then he stayed the course and managed to still keep the volume and output up. I think Khamzat hits just as hard. He's going to be very, very well conditioned in that first round. That's going to be a very difficult fight in that first round. If Magny can't keep him off him, keep away from the submission or taking heavy, heavy damage, Chimaev can get that upset. Not even upset, but I don't know what the odds are going to be on that, but Chimaev can probably get that done and see what happens. Now, Maurice Greene versus Marcos Rogério de Lima. Marcos de Lima just laid on him pretty much the entire three rounds. There's not much to say about that fight. I don't even need to go into his extreme details. Maurice Greene just couldn't get up. He got humped to death. He was raking the eyes. De Lima, I forgot what he was doing. Oh, he threw the late punch. And Herb Dean, you know, the next time it's not going to be a one. It's going to be more than that. You know, Herb Dean has this aura about him where he talks to you. It's like the grandfather or your dad coming from a strict household from back in the country days where it's like, you do that again, I'm going to whip you. I'm going to whip you. You know, he's got these dreads and everything. So, interesting enough, I thought De Lima would knock him out or get the TKO finish because Maurice, I don't, Maurice has good skills on the feet. He's not the best grappler, but I feel like he doesn't have the best chin with his height and everything. For some reason, he doesn't do as good as I thought he would have coming off the show. I thought De Lima is a hard hitter, good jiu-jitsu in terms of top control. I thought he was going to get the finish, TKO or KO, but he didn't. And yeah, like I said, he laid on him for three rounds. Now this next one, Gregor Gillespie versus Diego Ferreira. Oh my goodness, what a fun fight to watch. I don't know if they got fight of the night. I got to go back and look. Looking at this fight card, there's only one other fight that I think that could have possibly gotten the nod over that, Mike Trezano versus Ludovic Klein, even though I don't think it was as back and forth as Gregor Gillespie versus Diego Ferreira. Great fight, tons of action. First time for Gregor Gillespie getting back out there after about, I want to say almost 2 years, it feels like he hasn't fought. At the Garden was his last one, and that was 2019 in November. We are in 2021, so almost 2 years. He wins ground and pound battle of attrition, gets it done by just staying the course. 34 years old, saying that he's no spring chicken anymore, so he needs some stiffer competition. Yes, I agree. As long as he can keep that pace and keep that durability, it looked like he got hit with some shots that were very like, yo, that did not look good. But he stayed the course, missed a bunch of takedowns, and he got a bunch of takedowns. And people can say, oh, he didn't get, you know, his takedowns weren't that clean. But it's different when you're going for a single leg and you lift the leg up and then the guy pulls his foot out because there's no wrestling shoe for you to anchor onto. It's just a little bit different, a little bit easier for you to slide your foot out of there and get out of trouble. But Diego Ferreira, man, had some great scrambles, some great transitions. But it was Gregor Gillespie who was able to neutralize a lot of those positions from those knee bar attempts from Diego Ferreira, from the back control where he had one hook in, about to get the second one in. And Gregor creates a scramble situation, rotates, turns in, ends up in the guard, then ends up back on the feet, and then going for takedowns all over again. And Gregor Gillespie was tired. And if he's tired, anyone he's fighting is going to be tired because of that pace. Not everyone is able to wrestle and scramble at that high level and intensity for that long of a period. To scramble for 5 minutes straight. Holy bro, I don't think you guys understand. We would do these mock live drills where we go takedown. As you take the person down, your opponent, he gets right back up from a mat return. So you take him down, he dumps, he's got to turn. So it's not even a mat return. You take your opponent down. These are live drilling, mock drill bouts, we would call them. We do this all the time with Coach Brune and Cortland. So anybody who does this in D1, D3, D2, whatever, in the wrestling community, this is high-level stuff if you want to get a good pace with a good work ethic and still maintain the control and still not get hurt. You take the guy down, and you're shooting about 60, 75%, maybe 80%, depending on your partner, you and your partner's control and chemistry. You take them down, they turn around, get up, they blast back up to their feet, clear their hands, boom, you give them a little bit of resistance so they really have to fight it a little bit. They get out, then they turn around, they shoot, and they're back in on your legs, and now they're taking you down. Boom, put you down. You got to do the same thing. Either hit a switch or a Grammy, get back to your feet. Your partner tries to control you, get back up, and then you're standing up, and then you're back up, and you're doing this for 2 straight minutes. And by the time you're done, you're just like bent over, breathing super hard, and you're like, Coach, can we just go live? Because at least when I go live, I can kind of control the pace and take my time. With this, you're just constantly going and going. And this is 2 or 3 minute periods that you're doing this for. And you're only doing like 2 to 3, and then you're taking a water break, and then you're getting ready to go live. This is what we would do in college to get that intensity. But you are dead exhausted, and that's only 2 or 3 minutes. Your first minute in college wrestling is three. First period is 3 minutes. The second and third period are two-minute rounds. So 2-minute periods. So when you see this in a situation where Gregor Gillespie and Diego Ferreira are scrambling for all of 4 minutes straight, you can see why both these guys were exhausted. And it's a battle of attrition, because if you're not used to that pace, and if you don't do those simulations in training, you are going to be in trouble when you fight a guy like a Marab, when you fight a guy like a Gregor Gillespie. Even like myself, if I can get to a position where I can chain wrestle over and over and over. I haven't had to do that of late, which is nice. I think I've been having a little bit more of a well balance between my striking and my grappling, but I would love to get back to my grappling ways and really show that, dude, if you want to grapple with me and you want to take it there, good luck. You know, and people can say whatever they want. You were 1-for-17. Dude, Slippery Cage, all these guys slipping and sliding. A lot of people were starting to acknowledge, like, yo, dude, maybe Sterling was onto something. He wasn't making it up. There was a lot of positions where normally I would get a takedown in certain situations where now I know going forward I have to make certain adjustments and whatever. This is not about me. This is Gregor Gillespie and Diego Fair. Like I said, Diego's a tough dude, and he was just ranked. And for Gregor Gillespie to get a win like that over him, I think it puts him right back in the hunt with everybody else in that mix. And I look forward to what's going to be next for him. Now, Phil Halls versus Kyle Dawkins. Kyle Dawkins, I thought, was looking like a killer and a world beater in that first round. Phil Halls was able to keep the CFFC champion at bay. Dawkins looked like he might have had adrenaline dump or something. He looked fatigued after that first round. Didn't seem like he was able to recover much. And from there, Phil Halls was able to take over. And not in like the most dominating way, but he was able to take over, keep the pressure on him. And, you know, Phil Halls is a heavy hitter. So some of those strikes looked like they could have put Dawkins out, but Dawkins is a tough dude, and obviously he fought for Cage Fury. He was a champ, so of course he's going to have that that MO of being a tough guy and can endure some type of punishment. But Dawkins was able to fire back on occasions from time to time. But I do think Hawes was clearly the better guy and better conditioned in that second and third round, and that's how he got that nod. Mike Trezano versus Klein. Gets back in the win column. I think his last one he lost. Comes back with the serious mullet. Klein, he looked good to me too. The only thing about Klein was, man, all the circling, it looked like he was avoiding the fight. And I understand footwork, but it looked like Trezano was the busier guy. I think there was a 30-27 in there. That I didn't agree with. But at the same time, I did think Trezano won the second and third round, and I thought that should have been enough. It was definitely close, and it was one of those weird fights, but Trezano gets it done in a big way. I know people are saying Klein got that, like, those takedowns at the end, but he literally did absolutely nothing with them and was getting slapped in the process. So you kind of have to, you get a takedown, you got to do a little bit of damage for it to actually be worth something. Now, Jung Young Park versus Nchukwi. This was a fun fight. Almost got stopped at that end of that third round, decision majority. I guess it was one guy gave it like a draw for his scorecard, and then the other two judges gave it to Park, excuse me. So based on that, there's a couple fouls in there. Nchukwi looks like he throws a lot of heat into all his strikes, and he just looks like he's a tad bit slower than everybody he's been in there with so far. He's got to make some type of adjustment, because if he can't get behind his jab to really close the distance and slow guys down, he's going to be in some problems when it comes to the stiffer, the upper echelon of the competition in his division, so to speak. And Parker's good. I think that was his third win in a row. He's not the best guy, but if you can't get past a guy like that, you're going to have to get back to the drawing board. He's only 5-1 now, and he's going to have to figure out some things and really evaluate. He can't keep loading up on his strikes. He's got to get better at cutting off the cage, slowing people down, and being able to either chop down the leg to really stifle their movement or something, because he looked like the much slower fighter, and Park got in a couple shots, and obviously you could see the strength of Nchukwi when he's sprawling and just ended up on top of him, and probably in situations where his hips were beat and he should have been taken down, but he was still stopping the takedowns. That says a lot. So, I don't know. Park looked good, but I thought he looked very, very violent in that third round at the end where he's had him mounted, landing some big damage. And I think he gave up his back a couple times and cut him up with that elbow. Savagery. Fun fight to watch. Fun fighter to watch based on his last two performances, so to speak. And this last guy from Guyana, Carlston Harris, gets an anaconda choke after getting cracked by Aguilera. Comes back, lands a big shot. Aguilera, I think he's the one who initiated the takedown. And Harris, just on his knees, just manages to cinch through all the way his left arm, lock up his hands and pinch at the elbow to keep everything tight. And he uses his right leg to step over the top. And once he steps over the top with his right leg, he pinches the arm in, slides in for the anaconda choke, rolls him over, and eventually puts him to sleep. Very, very impressive. And again, a guy from Guyana. This is going to be good. Maybe this could be the trendsetter for a lot of those guys over there. What country? Makombunik. I don't know how to say his name, his nickname. I'm going to try to listen to the podcast to hear if there was anything said on that. Skeldon Guyana. Yep. We're going to break down the UFC 262 card later this week. So I actually just got off the phone. I actually recorded this podcast. I was about 5 minutes in. I had to stop because I got a call back from the doctor's assistant. That kind of hurt my soul because I was like, damn, we were on such a good roll. And I had to stop it early, take the phone call. And we are now scheduled to have my follow-up x-rays and follow-up appointment with my doctor, Dr. Robert Watkins Jr. this Wednesday in LA. Looking forward to that. It should be good things. And we'll see what happens. I'm pretty excited to get the news back and see how healed up everything is and see what his analysis is of where I am and go from there. So I got 2 days today and tomorrow to really crush PT. And then after that, I'm going to head out to LA, probably stay at my cousin's house and go from there so that I can have an easy way to get to the doctors in Marina Del Rey. So as always, guys, hit that like button. Thanks for always tuning in. Drop your comments and drop your clown emojis, whoever is out there. Because I know those clown guys are always doing that. I'll see you guys next time. Stay safe. Be safe. And if you like my shit, subscribe to my shit. I'm spinning back for you, baby. See you guys later. Hopefully we can do a lot of work at PT today. And I'm excited. UFC 262, battle for the title. It's coming up.
And remember,
I see you guys.
We bring the noise because the people want the funk. Until next time, this is the Weekly Scraps. Bye-bye.